Welcome to Tom Papa's Come to Papa.
Welcome to another edition of Come to Papa, your favorite podcast among all the other podcasts. You know, there's some loud podcasts, some real cerebral podcasts. There are the hobby podcasts. You wrap all those up, you put them in a ball, stick them in the trash, and what are you left with? This podcast. Kind of the best of all of it. You learn a little, you feel better about your life, you feel better about yourself. It's not stupid. Sometimes it gets a little dumb. There's no surprise to why you're listening right now.
Yeah, you want to be entertained. Where do you imagine them being right now, Tom? Are they in a car? Are they drinking scotch after a long day? Are they running?
Carol's doing the dishes. Don is vacuuming.
What?
Debbie Don's is walking her dog. What?
Don doesn't vacuum.
You don't think so?
No, that's Peggy.
Oh, that's sexist.
No, just Don doesn't do anything.
Don just sits around like a lump.
Don's place is
filthy. I
don't
know. I can't listen to podcasts. I don't listen to podcasts when I'm just like walking around the house because I've got other people around. So if you live alone or one other person that likes it, that's one thing that just... tell Alexa to throw it on.
Right.
Otherwise, you got your earbuds in. So, exercising, working on something, lounging around by the pool, that kind of thing. In the car, that's a huge one.
Yeah.
Big one in the car. If you're driving right now, honk. Good job.
I have like three really distinct, clear, almost like clairvoyant pictures.
Oh, yeah.
There's somebody on the plane right now.
Ooh.
They're on the aisle seat, but the guy is really big sitting in the middle.
Mm-hmm. Is he listening or no?
No, just you're listening right now, the person we're talking to.
Oh.
And that elbow is a little too far into your space.
Well, I say just lean on him. Cuddle in.
It's a little too warm, Tom.
Scrunch up. Hey, we're out on tour, currently moving around. I just got back from Kansas City, where Paul and I performed at the Truman not too long ago, which was a great show. And I went right back. It was funny because as soon as I got there, we pull into the Marriott, and right across is this park where they were putting up the Christmas tree. Remember that day when we were walking around?
Yeah, yeah.
It was like back in November or end of October, and they were putting up the Christmas tree for the first time in the park. It's still there, no lights on. They haven't taken it down yet. And then we got hammered with the big snowstorm, which was a lot of fun.
Yeah, I was wondering if you made it out.
Yeah, you know, it's funny. I got in before the storm, and then the storm happened, and I'm in the theater, like, doing live from here, doing rehearsal all Friday. And then the show on Saturday, and then it was over. It was like the snowstorm was happening out the window, but I didn't have to participate. It was kind of cool. But more on that in a minute. But getting on an airplane tomorrow to go to New York City for the live Come to Papa with Michelle Wolf, Dove Davidoff, Judy Gold, Rick Chrome, John Fish. So that'll be a great one. I'm literally leaving at 4 a.m. and I'll be there on stage tomorrow night at the Village Underground in New York City. Then sliding up to Mohegan Sun in Connecticut for Thursday, Friday, and Saturday.
To gamble his life away.
Yeah, in a big-ass casino. The Mohegan Sun Comics, great club, always fun. So come out for that one. And then Paul and I are in Annapolis, Alexandria, doing some Colorado stuff, a whole bunch of stuff. Go to TomPapa.com because we are out. We are on tour live from here. Come to Papa. Paul, Tom, done.
Taking it by storm. In the storm.
In the storm. Today we are broadcasting from what is an intense, in LA standards, storm.
Yes.
It has been raining since 7 o'clock this morning. It has been pounding down on the house. There is water in the streets. There is actual water coming out of the sky. And people are freaking out. My dog is confused. Yeah. The cat doesn't understand why he can't go outside. We have one leak in our bedroom, which we can't seem to figure out where it's coming from. It's funny, you know, you move into a place when you do move in. I've been here a while now. I don't even know what it is, 4 or 5 years. And when you move in, you know, they inspect everything and they go through the whole thing and you try and find everything that's wrong with the house, et cetera. And this one never came up that there was a little leak in the bedroom during the rain because, you know, first of all, it's probably 5 days you got to deal with it in the year.
Yeah.
But when it happens, it could be a problem. And it was never, that was one of the things that they didn't get caught on. You know what I mean? Like, we couldn't tell. It wasn't disclosed.
Right, right.
But it's there. It's trying to figure out where it comes from. And I'm starting to inspect it. You start to see, someone else spent a lot of time trying to do this too. There's like little, there's been like little patches. There's been some caulking. There's been like an extra little overhang.
Yeah.
Someone was dealing with this problem for a while before we showed up.
They put a painting over it. They did all this stuff.
Yeah.
That is so shady how they do that.
Yeah, well, you know, everybody, you know, look, it's one of those tiny things that, you know, living in LA, it's like, but you also don't want to get caught on it.
You know?
When you're selling the house, it's like, it's not a big deal. When you're moving into the house, you're like, well, this is a big deal. But so far, things are holding up kind of okay. It really feels like we're on a boat.
Yeah, I mean, there's nothing you can do. Like, nothing here was made for rain. The roads aren't made for it. The drainage, the houses are mostly flat or have just shingles on them. So it's like,
yeah,
the 4 or 5 days that weather is a factor, you just have to deal with it.
Yeah, I know. But, you know, this is going to be, if once you get over into like the 3-4 days of it, then like everybody that was on fire is now going to be sliding off the hill. Remember last year when up by Montecito where Ellen DeGeneres and Oprah live?
Mm-hmm.
They had a huge fire, then the rains, and the whole mountain just slid down onto the 101. Yeah, there were giant boulders.
Oh, I remember
boulders.
The road closed.
Yeah, it was closed, just mud. A couple people survived the fires, came home, and then got killed when the mud went through the house.
So crazy.
Yeah. This is our version of winter. I'll be in New York tomorrow. It's going to be 2 degrees. Everyone's dealing with the icy, icy cold. I was in Kansas City, as I said, during their first snowstorm of the year. Looked beautiful, but they had the big game. They had to play the game, Kansas City versus Indianapolis Colts.
All right.
And we were in a hotel it was one of those massive hotels where, like, anybody that's doing anything of any size stays there. We stayed in that really cool place.
Yeah.
Remember when we went? It was like an older hotel.
Oh, yeah. That's what I remember everything about the hotels. I remember the annoying people in the bar that the waitress had to deal with.
Yeah.
And then the waitress that told us way too much about her life.
Yeah, but that bartender, she was cool. Like, she was...
Bartender. Oh,
she, okay. Right? We sat at the bar and ate after the show. And it was a bar that was like... It used to be a jazz club. It was called, like, the Elbow Room or the Circle Room?
Yeah, that was it.
Or,
yeah, Elbow Room, I think, something like that.
And it was like this legendary... Kansas City is known... It was a real hub of jazz. It was called the Paris of the Plains, which I thought, well, that must be an architectural thing. No, it's because people acted like maniacs.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, they were playing jazz and smoking weed and going crazy and having sex, and they called it the Paris of the Plains. It was a little hotbed of jazzy action.
Yeah.
And that hotel had this great jazz club, which is no longer there. Now it's just a bar. But a lot of character, very cool. I stayed in the Marriott, which is this massive hotel. It's literally on two sides of the street. It's so big.
Wow.
Filled with child actors, teen actors. There was a thespian contest. of in Missouri.
So bad child actors.
Yeah, the ones who are knee deep in that stuff, and they're just singing in the elevators, just, you know, kids going through puberty, insecurity, nerves, just running up and down the hallways, in and out of the doors 1,000 times.
Oh, God.
And then descending on the hotel, all of the Kansas City fans and Indianapolis Colts fans.
Right, right.
So it was this weird mix of people at that hotel. It was so bizarre. I got into the elevator with a bunch of Colts fans after the game, and these poor 6 people in their jerseys came all the way down from Indy, watched the game, sat in the snow, mm-hmm. just snowed the whole time.
Oh, man.
And they lost, and they're just sitting in there all mopey. They're like, we're used to playing indoors and sitting indoors watching football.
Yeah.
I'm like, yeah, so did your team, apparently.
I will say this. I don't ever remember a game in Kansas City not being like some kind of horrible weather. Like,
yeah.
Every famous, like, I remember there was a crazy flood there. There was lightning that they had to stop. Like, the only time I've ever seen they stopped an NFL game for a thunder and lightning storm.
Really?
Yeah, like, hit the goalpost or something. It was like, and then I remember this crazy flood, too. So, yeah, Kansas City always has weather.
It's one of those cities, like, it feels like it's going to be growing over, like, the next 5 to 10 years.
Yeah.
Like, it feels like there's enough, like, of a base there, and it's, you can tell it's, like, cool things are coming in. It was that way a long time ago. It just feels like there's a little bit of a revival going on, like it's going to kind of pop. And we were at the Kauffman Center, which is this amazing art center, like, beautiful opera house and orchestra place, and just gorgeous. And, you know, and you meet all the people. Everybody's very nice and friendly and cool. So whenever we were on the road, you always think, could I live here?
Mm-hmm.
And then you look outside, and it's just pissing snow. And you're like, no, I don't think I could. I think that might be the one reason.
But it's not only that. It's just, it's, you know, summer is a month. You have snow, but then you also have tornadoes, mm-hmm. and all that. Horrible, like, Midwest weather.
Yeah, there's all that kind of stuff. And, you know, that's the good, that's keeps the bad people away, as they say. And, but a cool place to visit, a cool place to do shows. I think we'll be going back there more often for sure.
Yeah, I mean, that's the thing is, like, I don't know what it, how it affects things now, but, any place that's like within four or five hours of somewhere cool.
Yeah.
Something just pops up, because it was like that place we went to in New Hampshire. It was like,
yep.
It's 3 hours from Boston.
Right.
It's 3 hours from Montreal. We got to have a place for people to stop.
Or something. Yeah, we can do something in this spot. So that was very cool. It was a lot of fun, and it was cool to kind of like be around the football playoffs without actually being in the scrum and caring.
Oh, yeah, I remember where we went to. Do you remember the other place we went to, we walked around?
When we ate?
No, well, when we were just there. We went to that
library.
Huge library.
Yeah, yeah, it was a giant library.
That used to be a bank.
Yeah, and they made it into a library, and we hung out there for a little bit.
So you could see the vault and all that kind of stuff.
Yeah. I love how in every city there were these majestic giant banks that used to have money in them, and yeah. Now they're restaurants, nightclubs, libraries. Like, you don't need that. You don't need a big bank anymore.
No.
Everything's electronic, so you don't need vaults with... It must be a pretty rough go if you're a bank robber right now.
Bars of gold?
Yeah. It's all gone now. You don't have any of that stuff. At the TSA, going through the tiny Kansas City, the TSA people were all complaining how they're working for no pay.
Yeah.
They're working. I guess they told them to work and that they'll get paid eventually, but with the government shutdown, not getting paid. And I'm worried that some weirdness might happen because people are starting to sneak guns through as a to show that they can. And
sure, they're calling in sick too, right?
Yeah, I would imagine. Yeah. I haven't really been hit with any like major slowdowns. But it's just getting started.
Yeah, that's the tough part about that. Like, I was at some small town airport, and the guy was telling me, it's like, yeah, they purposely make it slow here because they want more people. So,
Really?
Yeah. So it was like they had like one flight, and everyone barely made it. I forget where it was. It was like in Pennsylvania or like upstate New York.
Because they only have two people working.
Yeah, and they're like, they want to get more people here, but the only way they can do it is if the airlines are like, hey, our people aren't making the flight.
Jeez. What a nightmare.
Because if you can imagine, like, you know, a lot of those places, they only have a handful of flights going out every day. So I'm sure they're like, well, we don't need anybody.
Yeah.
One guy can handle it. Bob can handle it.
And you know what? Bob, you can. Hustle up. What do you got to do? Look through some stuff and keep it moving.
Right.
I actually had to check a bag yesterday just to save my shaving cream.
Oh,
you did?
I didn't
realize. It was my first trip since the holiday, and I didn't realize I had a long thing of shaving cream in there that doesn't make it. It's not that cheap. So, and I got away with it on the way, and I was like, when I'm leaving and going through Kansas City, they're going to go through everything. I'm going to get snagged. I had a funny thing happen going through security. It was literally 5 o'clock in the morning, and I'm the only one going through, and I take my jacket off. I'm wearing a fedora, like my hat. The hat doesn't come out. The belt's going. Mm-hmm. I get my bags. I get my coat. No hat. It's stuck inside the thing.
What?
It's so light. So now the guy's taking those little bins that you put your phone in and your keys. He's lining those up like bowling and sending them through to try and pick off the hat. And eventually,
jeez.
Yeah, eventually, after a good 5 minutes, the hat finally, finally nailed it, and the hat came out. The world is not set up for hats any longer.
No.
You know, you have a hat, even if you're sitting in business class, they take your jacket, the hat's on you. You got to put it in the overhead with all the bags and it just gets crumpled.
Yeah.
You know, you go to a coat check, they don't have a place for a hat. There's just no... No one cares about a man in a hat anymore.
Yeah, I even saw somebody had one of those hat cases.
Yeah.
Above, and I was just like, get that thing out of there. What are you doing?
The person's trying to keep their hat in good shape.
So wear it.
You know, you see these people, these animals, you put your hat up there, and people see a space, and they just start shoving their bag and squishing your hat into the back. It's ridiculous.
I remember they used to have, in church, they used to have those little metal clips for your hat, like in front of you.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah.
See?
It's like old school.
Classy. Yeah. So, I have that bread. I have to shape that bread. How long has it been? 17 minutes. I had to shape some bread while Paul was here. I'm only home for 2 days, and I'm cranking out bread just so my family has it when I'm gone.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Did you give away the olive bread?
No, there's one in the freezer. I put it in the freezer.
Oh, yeah. There's a comedian friend of ours that was like, how come Tom has never given me bread? And I was like, I don't know. Have you asked him? He's like, no. And I was like, well, do you want me to say something? And he's like, no, I don't want it. And I was like, oh, you don't want it? He's like, well, no, it's kind of like when you like a girl and then she doesn't like you, so you're just like... So it's like you're really obsessed with this bread.
I am giving it away more. I'm just, like, now I'll just throw it in a bag and bring it to the show. And
so feel like it does travel?
It definitely travels. For one day, it'll travel.
So will people in Virginia see bread?
Virginia? No, because I got to go to Vail, Colorado first.
Oh, okay.
And then to Alexandria and Annapolis. They won't see bread.
But you guys should
bring us
stuff.
Someone tomorrow at Live Come to Papa might see bread.
Yeah?
Yeah, they might.
That's a good one.
Because I'm going to get two loaves out tonight. And then maybe.
Yeah, because that's... We got the... Where was that? Dallas? We got the cupcakes. We've gotten a couple cool things on the road.
Yeah, with people you know, not as well. We were just returning on tour now, so I'm sure there's a lot of people out there baking right now, getting ready for our return.
Are you insulted or are you complimented if someone brings bread to your show?
Total compliment.
Okay.
That in any small way that we're inspiring people to bake on their own and keep it going, totally into it.
All right.
Yeah, absolutely. My driver from takes me from the airport a lot, he showed up yesterday with a thing of green olives. He thinks that these are going to be the green olives to make the bread amazing.
Yeah. Green olives?
What is wrong with you?
Come on.
So good. So good.
They're just, that's like the thing, like we need to keep putting olives and stuff because they're growing, even though, where do they grow? They keep them in a jar.
Oh my God.
Where do olives grow? There's olive trees, right?
Yes.
But why do they have to keep them in a jar of water?
So they don't go bad. We can just put them in an envelope and hand them out to people. Put out your hands and we'll just give you a scoop and send you on your way.
Nothing travels. Well, you know what travels in envelopes, which is surprising? Butterflies. Did you know that? I'm serious.
Live?
Yeah. Like I went to the one of those places that has all the butterflies and it was like going to the next city. Uh-huh. And I was like, how do you get them? And they were putting them in envelopes. That's how they travel.
and just mail them?
Yeah. No, not mail them, but that's how they organize them. Here's the five whatever.
Aren't they flapping around?
Yeah, sure. They're alive. But yeah, that's how they travel.
It sounds abusive. Sounds like they would be all squished when you unload them.
Yeah, but they
don't.
Sounds
like some intern in the next place is going to open it up and it's going to be nothing but flat, dusty wings.
But they're already flat anyway. That's the whole point.
Well, their body's not flat. They're like a little worm body.
But you can't have there's no cage that can keep the butterfly, Tom.
What about in a little tent?
a tent?
Yeah, like a little, yeah. Like a little round.
I think maybe they don't get along with each other.
Why are these butterflies having to travel?
Because they do. You've never gone to one of those things where you just walk through and it's all butterflies like hitting you in the head and stuff?
Doesn't follow me to the next town.
Well, but they're like, it's a museum type of deal.
Like an installation?
A solarium. What is
like
it?
Like King Tut?
No. I did try to go last night.
You did?
Yeah.
To what?
King Tut.
The movie?
No, last night was the last night. It was open till midnight. My time was 10:15, and I went to the movie at 7, and then I gave up.
What movie?
It was a zoo. Well, they had like a 40-minute movie on the IMAX there.
You were at the place where they had the King Tut?
Yeah, it's downtown.
So you're there watching a movie
at 7.
50 feet away.
No, it's like, you know where the Coliseum is?
Yeah.
So you got to pay money to park, you got to do all this stuff, and then there's nothing else there. So I went to this movie at 7, narrated by Omar Sharif. Uh-huh. And it was kind of cool, told the story, and then the place was a zoo, man. It was like just crazy. And it was the last night, and they had extended the hours to midnight, and the soonest time was 10:15. I was like, there's no way that I can get earlier, and every time, there's people 2 hours from then that were already lined up, and I was like, I'm not doing this. This is not going to be fun.
No, that is not fun. That's a good move. What, just to see King Tut's crap?
Yeah, there's like 4 rooms of stuff.
Yeah, boy.
But
you know where else you can see it?
Online.
On your computer. I'm sure we could see everything that's in that stupid exhibit.
It's pretty interesting, though. You don't find it interesting?
I do, but I wouldn't stand through that crowd either.
I just find it interesting that they built it. You know, they built all those pyramids, right?
Yeah.
And then, you know, they're like, this is where the king's buried with all his riches. And then they were, like, amazed that people just started, like, looting them.
Yeah.
So then they built all the ones underground in secret. And they found all of those except for the King Tut one. And so that was the one that the movie's about. This guy was searching for it for years and years and years, and then there was like a water boy who had like his jug and was placing his jug, and he heard something hollow, and he found it just like on accident.
Well, good for him. No, I mean, it is impressive, and it's all beautiful stuff, and the boy king, and you know, there was at the Getty, there was some Egyptian stuff, not King Tut stuff, but other Egyptian stuff that they found. And it was very cool just to see the writing on the paper. And there was a mummy. Seeing the mummy is kind of the big thing, because it does feel like there must be a ghost floating around. You can see why people made movies that a ghost comes out of that and then attacks everybody.
Well, that's the big thing, was the curse. Like, the guy who did find it, he died. He died like 6 months later from some kind of like weird mosquito or something.
Oh, really?
And then the big one was the canary that they used to like find a couple of things.
Yeah.
While it was like in England, it got eaten by a cobra somehow. And nobody knows how a cobra got to England or got in it, but that's what happened to the canary. So they're like, we're definitely cursed.
That's pretty great. I like how they tried to nail Steve Martin like last year for being racist because of his King Tut stuff that he did in 1981. Dancing around like King Tut. And now like the new world is like, no, that's racist, you're making fun of Egyptians.
Yeah.
It's like, oh god, remember when people could just laugh and enjoy their lives?
Well, that was the thing, that was, you know, it was making fun of them turning it into a spectacle.
Yeah,
you know what I mean? Like, it's a museum.
Yeah,
but everyone's turning it into like, oh, we gotta get tickets to like Hamilton or something.
Right, exactly.
We gotta go see the boy king.
Oh my god.
But yeah, so I bailed on it. I don't know.
Oh my god, I just got horrible news.
Uh-oh.
Oh no. This is a Come to Papa related thing. My friend has just told me that William Stevenson passed away this weekend.
Oh,
you know the comedian from the Comedy Cellar, William Stevenson? He was like the host there for 20 years.
Oh, wow.
And he did a lot of live Come to Papas. He would always be the...
the voice, right?
Not Rick Crome. He would do... William Stevenson would do the sketches. He would always play like the bong or the turkey.
Oh, okay.
And he'd always be like, gobble, gobble, motherfucker. Oh, my God, that's terrible news.
Was he sick?
He is I don't know. Nobody really knows. He lost his phone. No one heard from him on Saturday. No one knows. Sister called the club yesterday. Oh, that's terrible, terrible news.
He's
such a sweet guy. His birthday was on our wedding anniversary, so we had that kind of... We would talk to him every year when... on our anniversary, we'd wish him well. And he was kind of... he was kind of chubby and stuff, but I don't think he didn't look like he was going to die, for crying out loud.
Oh, man.
Wow, that's so sad. He was like a...
Like a fixture there, right? A
fixture, for sure. I would always joke that he was so like mellow, and he was always high. I would always tell the audience, enjoy him now, because in another hour he's going to be pretty much asleep and phoning it in, because the guy's always smoking weed when he's doing it. Oh, that's what a terrible thing. Wow, it doesn't even register yet. Wow, that's so sad.
Well, yeah, that's the one.
God bless William Stevenson.
Yeah. That's the weird thing with comics. It's like guys that you're used to seeing like twice a year.
Yeah.
It's like it doesn't click until,
yeah,
you know, you don't see them for a long time.
But you'd see him whenever. I mean, every single month when we go to New York, and anytime you're there, he was there.
Right.
And I hadn't used him in Come to Papa for a while. I hope that didn't have anything to do with it.
I think you're in the clear, I think.
Wow. Well, this is a good segue, though. How was your colonoscopy?
Oh, well, it was good. Everything is clear.
You have a clear poop chute.
Everything's good.
Do they get funny at the end and say something like, and do they have any, you know, every job has their own jokes?
Yeah. No, not quite.
They don't say like, you're all clean in the pooper.
No, I think they know that you're not going to be, you're not going to be too coherent.
Were you out of it?
Yeah, well, when they tell you what they're, because I had.
So you get there and you take all your clothes off and they give you a robe?
Well, I mean, the whole big thing is like, this was like, I got it years early, just for like precautionary,
right?
A few precautionary things. They just wanted to like.
Your doctor was like, you should get this checked early.
Yeah, it's like a specialist thing. And so I was like, okay. So then. Yeah, you have to drink this, like...
When they tell you you got to go in early because it's like, we want to make sure, from that point on, how many times are you convinced that you have something wrong with you?
Well, I mean, it was that thing of last year was the year that I wanted to get caught up on all the health stuff, you know? Yeah. I don't want to be that guy that like, oh, yeah, he hadn't gone to the doctor in 10 years.
Yeah.
So basically, this new doctor that I had just wanted to have every test and everything and...
Right.
It was kind of like, what's your family history with this and that and all that kind of stuff. And he was just like, well, I think you should just...
You have family history of that?
Yeah, just a lot of cancer on my mom's side. So,
so he's like, check it out.
Yeah.
So when he says, okay, go check it out early, you know you're probably okay. But is there a part of your brain... Do you have any hypochondriac part of your brain that says, oh, God, tomorrow's when I go find out?
Well, you're like... You know, you hear about these baseball players or whoever, they get like colon cancer. Like somebody I just, one of my Facebook friends just got like colon cancer or something. So obviously you're always like, it could happen. I mean, they could find it early.
Right.
Which would be good.
To my original question.
Yeah.
How panicked are you going in? Are you think, oh, it's 50-50 or 10% chance I'll have it?
I will say...
Like, some people will be like, oh, God, I'm doomed. 90% chance I've got it.
Sometimes you have that.
Right.
Here's the thing that I was more... Not more worried about, but, like, whenever you get in that situation, I was not quite sure about the status of the anesthesia. Because it was very unclear...
What do you mean the status of it?
Like... There was one person that's like, you're going to have that propo, whatever, that Michael Jackson used to get every night to knock him out, and you're going to be out.
Right.
So don't worry about it. And then other people are like, no, you're going to have this twilight thing,
right,
which you're still conscious. And so that seemed weird to me.
Yeah, you're not aware, but you're responsive to the...
And I'm like, I'm going to be aware. That's like when they say people in a coma aren't aware, and then they're like, yeah, I could...
I heard all you guys.
Yeah, you were hitting me in the head. So when I got there, it was, you know, and the whole other thing is like the lead up to it, you have to drink this like fluid that basically clears out your whole system.
Yeah.
But also means that you can't eat anything.
Right.
The entire day before.
That's where we left you.
And so that, just kind of that whole thing of like, your life is, you know, kind of turned upside down because you can't really do anything else.
When do you stop eating?
It's like the 2 days before. Like
2 days before?
Like you can have dinner like...
You're going Monday morning.
You can have a big dinner Saturday night.
And then Sunday...
All day, you can't eat.
Breakfast,
nothing.
Okay, so the whole day.
You can have like clear like lemon Jello or something like that, or
right,
like ginger ale, which I was fine with. I was like, I'll have Sprite or whatever.
Right.
So that part wasn't that bad, but it was just the fact that like... You can't eat anything. You can't, if you go anywhere, you got to be worried that you got to use the bathroom or something. So it's like basically the whole day, it's like you're sick, but you're not really sick.
And are you excited because you're losing weight?
No.
Were you weighing yourself?
I think I checked it. Yeah, it wasn't that big a difference.
Yeah.
But it was like, you know, and then it's like, are you going to be able to sleep? Are you going to whatever? And obviously... And then they changed it like 3 hours. Like it was supposed to be like first thing in the morning, like 8.
Yeah.
And then he moved it to like 10:45.
Oh.
which, you know, obviously somebody had like a serious thing that they had to get.
Yeah, but you want to knock, who cares about that guy? You
right.
Knock it out. You want to be done with it.
So yeah, I get over there, and then you have to have like somebody that you know take you home.
Yeah.
So you have to like kind of line that up too.
Right.
Because you know you're going to kind of be out of it. So the two things I'm worried about is, A, am I really going to be knocked out? And
yeah.
B, am I going to say any crazy stuff at the end? Am I just going to be out of it for like a couple hours?
Yeah.
So have you been knocked out like
Never.
That?
Never.
Never?
No.
Have you gotten any surgeries?
No.
Really?
Uh-uh.
Are you sure?
Yes.
Oh, I had my tonsils out when I was like 7. That's the only thing I've ever had done.
Yeah, no.
So that was pretty rare. But yeah, if you've never had anything done, that's kind of crazy. No stitches?
No.
You never got stitches?
Nope. I was born with a scar on my face.
Uh-huh.
But they didn't stitch it. They dragged me out with forceps because my head was so big.
Oh, wow.
And they slipped. And the metal forceps sliced my little baby face. That was my entrance onto the planet. I made my appearance with a cut face.
You're definitely Italian.
Yeah. And, but no stitches. And, no, I never had stitches.
So do you have any kind of like fear of hospitals or you just don't know?
No, not really.
Okay.
It's not my favorite place to go.
But you've never been there for anything.
No, just to visit
for
people's
yourself.
Babies. Right?
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, no. I go to the doctor and stuff.
Yeah, that's
physical.
Why I don't like them, because my mom worked at like a hospital.
Right.
So I'd go meet the people. And then
was this in a hospital or was this in a just a...
This was a surgery like a place, but it, yeah, basically a hospital.
Because I think when my wife went, it was like a place that just did colonoscopies.
No, this is like a surgery center, but there's like a big hospital kind of connected to it. When I went there, it felt like you were, you know.
Yeah.
Because there was like another, they had like the curtain next door and that guy was doing something else.
I have to say, a lot of times when you talk to people, and I just talked to a couple people recently about this, I'm sensing that you did not enjoy this. not that you would, but my other buddy was like, I'm sensing a little more dread in your story than you didn't. You were.
Well, the fact that it worked out well is that's key
good.
To it. But it does kind of like turn. I'm a person who really likes doing what I want to do.
Yeah.
So the fact that I can't eat and I can't do what I normally want to do.
Yeah.
That I don't like.
What about the you walk in, you take your clothes off and you lay on a thing and they knock you out.
So basically, well, here was the interesting thing. So the nurses were, that's the whole thing whenever you hear about people that are seriously ill.
Yeah.
How great the nurses are. Like, my mom is a retired nurse, and every nurse that I dealt with was awesome. The first
right.
one was, like, really cool.
Right.
Kind of laid everything out. And then they did one IV, and I was like, so am I... That's the question that I had. Is like, so am I going under now, or what is it really?
Yeah.
And she's like, well, we just put this in, and this is Arnold Palmer or something like that. I was like, what? And they're like, or Shirley Temple.
Uh-huh.
I was like, what are you talking about? It was like one of their jokes, you know?
Yeah.
And I guess it's like the hydration thing. You know, the stuff that people
yeah.
in Vegas, when they're hungover, they pay to get hydrated
yeah.
for IV.
Uh-huh.
So that's what I got, just because I couldn't eat or drink anything. They want to make sure I was hydrated.
Right.
So they did that first, but using that IV, that's what they put you under with.
Uh-huh.
So they told me it was a... So the next nurse comes, and she's even more laid back.
Right.
And she's the person that's doing the anesthesia.
Mm-hmm.
So they roll you in there, and I did meet my doctor who was... cool, like his energy is always important.
Yeah.
And he was like, cool. He's like, hey, how you doing?
Right.
So I was like, okay, is he excited about doing this? He's not like
yeah.
rushing for golf or whatever. And yeah, I mean, it was kind of crazy. Like, they had this big high definition TV, and that's where your insides are going to be like playing for you.
Oh, wow.
So it was kind of weird that, like, so she was like, you know, I kind of look at you and tell the doctor how you're feeling. So it was still the thing of you're going to be asleep, but kind of I was like, I want to make sure I'm definitely asleep for this.
Yeah, but that kind is that you're knocked out. You are knocked out. You're not going to feel anything, but you are responsive to them. Like they could say roll over and you'll do it.
Right. That's
weird.
Freaky, right?
It is freaky, yeah.
I'm not comfortable with that.
Yeah, it's a strange one.
So she told me it was it's fentanyl and a mixture of fentanyl and Valium.
Jeez.
Which is basically what killed Prince, Tom Petty, like every 10 people in the last year.
Oh, Jesus.
So I was like, oh, shoot, you know?
Yeah.
And so basically, like, you can kind of see when they kind of start and...
You could see?
Yeah. And I was kind of like, I shouldn't be able to see this, or do they know? And then it was this weird thing of like... It was almost like a meditation. Like I was staring at something and I was awake, but I don't really remember it. It was like this weird memory thing. Yeah, it was very strange. But it was exactly what they said. Like before I even knew it, it was like over and nothing was sore. Like nothing, even my IV thing.
So even being kind of alert, it was like being knocked out and woken up, like time-wise.
Yeah, but you didn't even feel like you got knocked out.
Right.
That was the weird thing. Because even, you know, like, I'm trying to think, like, it's kind of like a little bit of a time travel thing. Because I remember everything, but then it's like, oh, yeah, I went to the bathroom and changed, and then I did this. And, you know, my buddy Gary picked me up.
Right.
And we kind of had, like, a normal conversation. And then I asked him later on, I was like, was I really, like, loopy? He's like, no, I didn't notice anything.
Oh, wow.
So I guess it wasn't as weird as I thought. And then...
Yeah.
And then, I just went home and slept. That's the big thing when I have something like that is, like, you get nervous and...
Yeah.
You don't really sleep well.
Your day's shot.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It was, like, a couple days. That's the thing.
Right.
No eating. And then the next day.
Like
your schedule, like your whole week was based around this. That's what I didn't like.
What was your first meal? Did you go off?
You didn't go crazy. You're not really supposed to, like, the thing, the whole next day, your body's still kind of, like, recovering.
Right.
And so you're also thinking, I've got a clean slate here.
Yeah.
So I don't want to start with elk meat or whatever or something.
Elk would be okay.
What if I just started vegan the whole time?
I forgot the bread.
Oh, shoot.
I think we got to move the podcast.
Okay.
I started that bread, and if I don't do it, if we don't shape it now, it's going to be troubles. Where's my stand? I'm holding it. All right, grab your cords.
Okay.
So the final part of this, we're going to be on the move.
Can I get it?
I got it. Well, that's good that everything turned out all right.
Yeah, it was a very strange experience, but one that...
Will you have to go back in 4 years?
No, I think it's like 10 or 15.
10 or 15? Oh, yeah. That's great.
Because you have to do it for the first time, right?
Look at Cynthia just sawing through the bread. Look how hard it is.
I know. So she knows how to cut it now. But are you making your own too?
Yeah, I've got to shape this bread.
You forgot to shape it.
Look, I can make a sandwich out of this bread.
Ooh, that's good. Well, it's got holes because it's so well hydrated.
That's where you put the olive. This reminds me of my dad. My dad always makes tuna fish sandwiches for lunch.
He does?
Yeah.
Tuna's good stuff. All right, so I've got my baskets.
You guys are like running a restaurant. You got tuna fish. He's cutting bread. He's making bread.
Yeah. I have to say, that's the hardest part about... it's such an indicator now. It's not the hardest part, but it's the indicator of when I'm on the road. Is that I know I'm not, like when I'm in the, everything's about the food. It's about making the bread. It's about going and shopping and getting the supplies for the week. Like I can, if I know I'm able to bake bread and also have a bunch of stuff that I can put on it, like from the store, then I know I'm home for a while.
So what are you going to do now exactly?
Now I'm going to, the bread has risen, and then I shaped it for the first time, the pre-shape. And now I've got to flip it over, shape it into loaves, and put them in these proofing baskets.
But that's risen right there? That looks kind of flat.
Well, it flattened out because it relaxed. I beat it up, and it started as like a big ball, and now it's down.
So then you're just putting flour on it, and then stuffing it in that bowl, and then it rises more?
No. No, I've got to shape it. This is the final shaping of the bread. Sorry to have to do this at the end, everybody, but it's all timing.
So what's the shape? It looks like you're just putting it into a ball.
You're kind of making it into like a little bit of a... Yeah, it will be a ball. It'll be a ball. And then it'll go into this basket. And then you will have bread.
And this is what we saw the people do in Tartine.
Yeah, in San Francisco.
They're doing it like...
1,000 of them.
1,000 in a row.
Yeah.
Tom's just doing 2, so he's putting extra care.
Yeah, but this started yesterday when I got off the plane.
Okay, so now it looks like a ball to me.
So that is a ball.
All right.
It's going to be a little bigger.
Okay, and then what's the next step after this?
Then I'll take this and it'll go in the... sorry, it's hard to talk on the mic at the same time. This will go in the refrigerator and it will proof, which means it'll... it's basically the structure that enables it, that gives bread structure, the gluten framework will, it all comes together, it proofs, the outside gets nice and firm, and then it'll throw them in the oven. A lot of times, most of the time I'll do this, right now it's 12:30, 1:30. Yeah, this normally I would bake it in the morning. I would put it in the fridge, leave it overnight, and then do it. I'm going to be rushing it a little bit because I have to make it tonight because I'm traveling so early.
But this looks really good. Like this, how long did it take you to learn how to do that?
To make this shape? To do
yeah.
This? It took a little while. It takes a little bit because in the beginning, it's like a mess. Like you're doing it and it's sticking to your hands. You don't know how to handle it. It becomes... Yeah, I've got it pretty dialed in.
Because that looks like that part of the cooking show where like people did all the ingredients, and then all of a sudden it looks perfect, and you're like, "Hey, wait, how did it get from?"
Yeah,
it was just a slop of yeast, and now it's perfectly rounded and looks like it's ready to be baked.
Yeah, no, it's got to sit. It has to sit and proof a little bit more. And usually it could go overnight, and that also allows all of the flavors to come in and become richer. If I were to just put this in now, it would come out flat,
and it wouldn't
have a lot of flavor. The longer it can proof, the better off you are. The more structure you'll have, it'll have a good structure, so then it'll have this oven spring, and it'll turn into this big puffy loaf, and the flavors will be deeper.
And when will these come out of the oven?
Well, I'm going to do this probably tonight at like 8. So it's going to be short. It's going to be cutting corners a little bit.
Okay. Well, you have to record you taking them out so people see what it turned into.
All right. I will. I promise.
All right.
All right. Good. Everything's shaped up.
We were just recording that for you guys, the Patreon people. You can see how Tom shaped his bread. Now he's putting it in the... I'm doing play-by-play. Bread play-by-play. He's putting the 2 bowls into the refrigerator, and Bella just brought a huge bone and dropped it right in front of Tom's mic.
All right, we did it. Good job. Let's go back to the compound.
Bella's eating the flour that Tom dropped on the floor.
Bella's really going stir-crazy because she's not allowed outside.
It's still pouring.
I know. Look at that rain. It's crazy. All right. Thanks for coming along with that, guys. That was, you don't want to blow the bread before you hit the road. And then the real trick is if I could get one person in my family to feed it before I got here, I could come in and make bread immediately, but nobody wants to help.
Have you missed a week in a long time?
No. No, it's been a while. I mean, the good thing, being off tour for the holidays, I was... home for a good amount, and you really get into a rhythm, and then that's when I started giving bread away because I just had so much of it. But, you know, that's life, Paul. It's just it's become a metaphor for being home.
Right.
You know, if I have the time and I'm sitting here and I'm able to write and bake bread, that's you're in a good home space. But then you got to hit the road and go have some fun.
Yeah, that's right. But, this week, it keeps you level when you're living Studio 54 life and you come back here.
Yeah, and fill up your bread. Well, I'm glad everything worked out with your poop shoot.
Hey, thanks, man.
And
thanks to doctors and nurses everywhere. That's really like an amazing thing. I was still just being a comedian. I was like, how do they find people who want to take care of other people all day long? Yeah. Isn't that like an amazing, like that's kind of a cool, you know, most of my family's in the medical, my brother's a doctor, my mom's a retired nurse. So that's like a special calling, I feel like.
Oh my God, those people are, unique. And it's not something that they can learn. Like, you can learn how to be a good whatever, but you are kind of built for it.
Yeah, and the people who want to do it and that are good at it, that's a special thing. So be nice to nurses and doctors everywhere.
Right.
We do our thing. That's why I was like, I don't do this. I'm glad that you guys do this. And they were equally as happy that I was telling jokes to people in Iraq and all over the place, too. So I think that's what makes the world go around.
Yeah. And again, one last time before we split, all our thoughts and prayers go out to William Stevenson.
Yeah.
The great comedy icon of New York. Passed away last night, I guess, or over the weekend. Nobody really knows. I don't know the details, but a horrible loss when someone from the community goes like that. Let's hope it wasn't health-related. And if it was, he should have gotten his poop chute checked, like Paul. All right, everybody, enjoy your life.